Good morning.
Good morning.
Hope everybody's doing well today. It's great to see you. So, my last lecture I talked about Upta Gupta. Remember him? Upta Gupta was a fourth ancestor of Buddhism, and I told this story. He was well known for converting, maybe converting is the wrong word, for bringing a lot of folks around to Buddhism and to realization. So do you remember the story of Upta Gupta is meditating and a demon comes along and he puts a garland around Upta Gupta's neck with the intention, flower garden, with the intention of annoying Upta Gupta. Upta Gupta, I have a hard time saying his name. Upta Gupta, annoying him. So Upta Gupta makes a garland out of a rotting dog. It was a dog, a snake, and a human being. And he transformed the garland into looking like it was a flower garland. And he went to the demon and he said, "Come here, I have a gift for you." And so he put the garland around his neck. And then it turned into all this thinking stuff, which is what it symbolizes is becoming aware of our suffering. Okay, so Upta Gupta has shown the demon that this about this suffering that he's going through. So the demon goes to all these different gods in various realms and says, "Get this garland off of me. What can I do?" So he's running around, and finally, one of the gods, Indian gods, says to him, "If you fall on the ground, you must rise from the ground. It is impossible to stand apart from the ground. You must seek liberation from a Buddhist of enlightened powers." So at that point, the demon gives up and says, "Okay, uncle, I'm going to go see Upta Gupta." Because the gods say, "He's the one who put the garland on you. He's the only one who can help you." So he goes and becomes a student of Buddhism, and a happy ending to the story. So this lecture that I gave a week before last goes into all the details about the metaphors for these various things. But what I want to talk about today is I want to talk about what Dogen had to say about this verse. So again, the verse is, if you fall on the ground, you must rise from the ground. It is impossible to stand apart from the ground. So it's impossible to stand up apart from the ground. You must seek liberation. Well, that part is in here. You must seek liberation from a Buddhist of enlightened powers. But mostly what Dogen's focusing on here is that first part about using the ground to stand up from the ground. And he talks about this in his fascicle called Inmo. And Inmo is Japanese. And Inmo is translated as the word it. So Inmo has two definitions. One would be the definition of the kind of way we use the word it to reference something else. So we say, you know, it's over there, or I got it, or something like that. But usually it refers to some concrete thing or some concrete idea. And that way we use it in speech. And then there's the Buddhist understanding of the word it, which is reality itself. So this way that we understand this, something that we can't grasp about reality, something that we can't make concrete about reality, something that's ineffable, that's undefined in a certain way. So this way of the totality, the interactions, the interpenetration of all beings. So this way of this Buddha nature of reality itself, suchness is it called, thusness. So this way of talking about reality, we say things just as they are, things just as it is. That would be something Suzuki Roshi might have said, that way of taking the plural and the singular and putting them together. So then that way it points to this ineffable nature of reality. Okay, so in the fascicle, he uses this way to talk about ground, When he says ground, he's talking about Inmo. He's talking about both of these things. He's talking about reality as our concrete daily reality, and he's talking about reality as this kind of ineffable understanding of the nature of the interconnection of all being. Now, both of those things, we're dividing them up. We're talking about them as two separate things, but actually both of those things are simultaneously the same thing. So though we often talk about, we say form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Emptiness is not different from form, form is not different from emptiness. So in this way, we're talking about this way in which the form realm, this concrete form realm, is impermanent, it's interconnected, it has this ineffable quality, it is what we say as is Buddha nature, it is the nature of Buddha because it is this, all this interconnecting functioning of the world is Buddha nature. That's the essential nature of everything from this talking about this way about the world. So the world is both concrete and the world is also at the same time impermanent, interconnected, interpenetrating. So this podium is a thing, and yet simultaneously it is all of reality presencing right in this moment. This tree, this is made out of wood, so this wood was a tree. So that means that in the life of this particular podium, which will also, there's a little plaque on here, was made by Rodney Tanaka in Boy Scout Troop 611, the San Jose Buddhist Church, Butsuen. So here, and it says that in 1991, this was an Eagle Scout project. So if you start taking all of that and talking about that from all the interrelationships that make up this podium, if you could do it, you could make the whole world. If you could do it, you could describe the whole world. You can describe the tree. You can describe the water. You can describe the weather that made that happen, that the tree grew from. All the causes and conditions that had to come together, which includes Big Bang, right? Everything is included in this moment of the tree-ness of this podium. And that's also about Rodney Tanaka, who we don't even know who he is, right? He's probably still alive. He was an Eagle Scout in 1991, so he's probably, what, late teens?
Huh? 45.
45, yeah. So here, Rodney's out there somewhere doing something. And there's this piece of Rodney's effort, this piece of Rodney's life right here, here. And so there's this way in which we are connected with Rodney, and we don't even know him. So there's this way in which we do know him, though. So this is that kind of ineffable side of it, in which it is also it. This podium is it. Rodney, you say it. So it's all here in this particular moment. So Dogen's saying, he's saying the ground, Inmo, it, this is the ground. This is the ground that we have to rise up from. This is the ground that we use to rise up. So Dogen said in his fast school, he said, when we get up, inevitably relying on the ground, we do not wonder that the falling down was on the ground. Okay, so when we get up and we rely on the ground, so we rely on this ineffable nature of reality as well as this concrete ground that we stand up from, it's impossible to stand up apart from the ground. So this is, we can think about this in a very concrete way. If you fall down, you cannot get up except to push up against ground. So there's that side of it. And also, from the Buddhist perspective, you cannot get up out of delusion. You cannot transform your life without letting go of this narrow view that does not include the totality of all being. So in that way, you cannot get up from the ground without using the ground. He says, you must seek liberation. Excuse me. He says, when we get up inevitably relying on the ground, we do not wonder that the falling down was on the ground. So he's pointing out something here that we don't think about. He says, well, you should think about, what is this relationship between the ground and the ground and the ground, right? The ground is grounding the ground. What is that relationship about? inevitably, when Dogen says, you do not think about, that means you should be thinking about this particular thing. You should be asking these questions. You should be investigating what this is. So what is getting up? So getting up is that action, right? Getting up is the effort that we put into it. Getting up is this way that we understand the nature of our experience. So we say, in Buddhism, we say, well, getting up in this case is the bodhisattva path. So what is the bodhisattva path? This is this path of wanting to benefit all beings. This is this way of defining the nature of our experience as wanting to be helpful. When we talk about Avalokiteshvara, Avalokiteshvara hears the cries of the world and responds. Avalokiteshvara, some iconography of Avalokiteshvara has like 100 arms, and each one of those arms has something in it, right? Some concrete thing, it, that can respond to this need. So getting up is learning the bodhisattva way. Getting up is learning about the mind of the Buddha. Getting up is learning in practice. Through doing this practice, we learn about the nature of our life. We learn about the nature of other people's lives. We learn about the nature of how to respond. So getting up is about learning about the self. Dogen says, in the Genjo Koan, knowing the self is to forget the self. So this way in which first we have to know our true nature. First we have to investigate the nature of what our life is. And then as we investigate that and contextualize it differently, then it's easier to let go of that when it's appropriate. It's easier to not get caught in our kind of selfish mind and to let go of that and actually respond to the totality of the situation. So first we have to learn about the self, and then we have to learn about that self's place in the world, how that self is in this world. What is our life in relationship to expressing the whole? So again, our life is it. The whole is it. Both of those are the ground. So the activity of understanding the nature of that and getting up is called getting up. So we're being asked to get up. And Dogen's saying the way we get up is that we use the ground to get off the ground. So relying on the ground to get up from the ground means that we have to rely on our concrete life, our concrete daily life, going to work, driving our car, go to a grocery store, hanging out with our buddies, having relationships with our partners, our family. This way in which we use this concrete life to get up, and also at the same time, we rely on this interconnected life. We have this deep connection to all of life at the same time. So both of those things have to be part of getting up. Often in spiritual practice, we want to get rid of the part of our life that is the kind of concrete part. It's like we go, spiritual life is not about that. It's not about going to the grocery store. It's not about having a fight with somebody. It's not about driving our car. It's about some kind of imaginary life that I have that's called maybe in my mind going to the monastery, or maybe it's going to the temple. But it's something different than my everyday life. That's something I imagine what it's going to be like. I imagine what it would be like if I were enlightened. Like if I were enlightened, things would be perfect. I would never suffer. I would never say stupid things or wrong things. I would never do anything that was unskillful. But actually, when we think about enlightenment that way, it's a very selfish way of thinking about it. Because when we think about it that way, what we're talking about is we want to ease our own suffering. It's like we want to get out of being a human being. We want to get out of being in this world. But actually, getting up is just living with our life just as it is and being willing to see that this is what our life is. And that's what enlightenment comes from that. Enlightenment doesn't come from some imagined state. I can tell you from personal experience, if you go to the monastery, it all goes with you, right? It's like when you're packing your bags, you're packing all your stuff with it, you know, and I'm not talking about your clothes. So, you know, it's like you get there and you discover, oh, everybody else brought their stuff too. Like, everybody else is a pain. So all of a sudden, not only that, you're trapped with them. There's no, you know, no TV, no movies to go to, no restaurants. There you are, in the case of Tassajara, there you are down in a valley where it gets dark at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, cold, and you're stuck with 60 people in a small space. And that's where that's the juice of your practice, right? Then you start realizing, okay, that's where it's actually happening. What's happening is in these relationships that you're having. And then you start to realize that you're sitting in the meditation hall and you can just tell by listening to how somebody walks, the sound of them walking on the gravel, the sound of them walking on the porch of the zendo. You can realize who that person is. You know, oh, that's so-and-so. And then you realize, and you know, not only do I know who that is based on the sound of their footfall, I also know that when they're unhappy, and I know when they're suffering, and I know that that's like my experience, and I start to have this really deep affinity and love for that person, even though they drive me nuts. So there's this way in which we start to recognize that we are in this interpenetrating relationship. We are in this deep interconnection with all those people that we're with, even the people we don't like. So somehow we can love them and not like them at the same time. And that's kind of like family, isn't it? Like the family members that we have, that we love them and we don't like them at the same time. So this way that, how do we negotiate that? You know, that's realization. How do we negotiate that moment after moment in a way that's actually skillful and helpful, in a way that is the Bodhisattva path, in a way that recognizes that Buddha nature in ourselves and others. So that's where enlightenment comes from. It doesn't come from some idea in our head about some feel-good idea that we have in our head. It really is being, you know, down in the trenches. And so we say, you know, in Buddhism we say, like a lotus in muddy water. So this lotus of enlightenment, this perfect flower that we, you know, I can't tell you how many spiritual, you know, you'd like see a poster for something spiritual and there's always the lotus, right? It's there, the glowing white lotus. But that glowing white lotus grows out of the muddy water of our life, grows out of the mud of our confusion. And that's the Bodhisattva path. So we have to rely on the ground to get up from the ground. So then he says, those who fall down on the ground inevitably get up on the ground, or up using the ground. And if they want to get up without relying on the ground, they can never do so at all. So this is this way in which we have an unrealistic notion, or a notion of rejection of our life, a way in which we see our mistakes, we experience our mistakes, somebody points them out to or whatever, and we just are, that freaks us out so much, we just don't want to be part of that. So part of this path is the acknowledgement of our own mistakes, a willingness to be present for our own mistakes and the mistakes of others. But it's a good place to start with the self, with ourself, and to say, yeah, you know, that was really embarrassing. Or I did something that was really unskillful. And a willingness to be present for that and acknowledge that that's part of this too. That that's the ground. That's part of this ground that we get up from. Because we live in an imperfect world. We are imperfect people. We cannot be perfection. Perfection has to include this. It has to include this aspect. It can't be some idea that we have about perfection. So we're going to make mistakes, and that's part of the ground. And how we get up from the ground is this willingness to accept. Accept things, as we say in Zen, we say things just as they are. Accept this life, which includes mistakes, includes saying stupid things, being hurtful, because inevitably we do hurt people. So there's this way that we include that. We include it in a way that says, yeah, I made a mistake and I want to do better. I will make an effort to do better. But if we start out with, I made a mistake, I can't cope with that, I don't want to see that, my spiritual practice has to be perfection, and it doesn't include this mistake, then we have a problem, because of course we can't be with that. We want to push that away because it's so painful. So this way that we can accept our own mistakes. And we look around and we go, we can see everybody else's mistakes, right? We look around and go, oh yeah, that person, man, they've got some serious mistakes going on over there. And we see, oh yeah, that's just like me, too. I got some serious mistakes going on over here. And we can live with this. We can work with this. So that's where this lotus of muddy water, that's where this enlightenment comes from, the practice with that. The enlightenment comes from a willingness to really be present for our lives just as they are. And then to say, okay, I accept this. This is just as it is. I'm a flawed human being. Now what? Now what can I do? And that we start from that place. So if you cannot start from that place, from that concrete place of dealing with or being present for this life, you cannot use the ground to get up off the ground. So that ground is that aspect of our lives, and it's the aspect of our lives, again, that we say in Buddhism, we say suchness. Suchness is this aspect that is the way we talk about this deep, interconnected working of life, which from a Buddhist perspective is essentially altruistic. The whole world is making the world. The whole world's effort makes this world function. This whole world's effort allows us to be alive. This whole world's effort allows a plant to be alive, allows this podium to happen. It allows everything that is and everything that we acknowledge in our world, take for granted in our world, is produced by the effort of all beings of this world. And that is an altruistic act, even though we don't understand the nature of that act. So from this position, just the very isness of everything that we can name and not name, functioning within its place, is making the world. And we're part of that making of the world. So on one level, we don't even know what our function is. On a certain level, we don't know what we are doing. There may be aspects to us as human beings, just by the very nature of being a human being, that is making the world. Maybe the fact that we exhale, what the gases that we exhale make the world. Like trees, right? Trees take carbon dioxide and turn them into oxygen. Maybe our exhalation supports some other aspect of reality. So in that way, we have nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with our effort. It has nothing to do with anything that we might construe as being our purpose in life. So in a certain way, it's like our life may be just in and of itself, without anything going on that we can name or call something in particular about the purpose of our life, is supporting the world, is making the world. Or Stoughton would say, the world, worlding the world, is happening. As human beings, as practitioners of Buddhism, we say, oh, we are following the Bodhisattva way. That's our intention. That's our deepest desire and purpose. Or as Suzuki Roshi would say, our inmost request is to be helpful, is to wake up to this interconnected aspect of our life. So maybe when we wake up to that, we say, oh, it's really important for me to recycle. I'm going to wake up to the interconnectedness of my trash to the rest of the world, how much plastic I produce and how it affects the ocean. So that's a kind of conscious way that we say, I want to do this thing. or we wake up to, I don't want to create harm and suffering in my relationships. You know, I really want to be a person who is supportive of other people. So that means that I'm going to be nice at the grocery store. I'm going to drive in a certain way. I'm going to treat my friends in a certain way and my enemies in a certain way, or just everybody in a certain way. And so that's my effort. So in that way, we have this conscious notion of what we're doing. So there's these two things happening simultaneously. So you could almost say that conscious effort is the concrete it, right? It, this something I'm doing. And then there's that ineffable it that we don't know what it is. So that's that ground. So this effort is we're getting up using the ground to get up. Those who fall down on the ground inevitably get up on the ground. And if they want to get up without relying on the ground, they could never do so at all. So in another way to talk about this is to talk about this world that we live in. So we're suffering right now. We're all having a problem. You know, we're kind of aghast at what's happening politically and all the things that are happening in our world. But, you know, this is the nature of the Saha world. So what does Saha mean? Saha is the Saha world in Sanskrit is called Saha Loka, and it means the world of endurance. Doesn't it feel like that way sometimes? You know, it's like I'm enduring, I'm, you know, carrying on. Because in some ways, like, we don't have any choice, right? We're just carrying on. But when you think about this, Dogen lived in a hugely difficult time. He lived in a difficult political time. It was the time of the transition between what's called the Heian and the Kamakura periods in Japan, around the 13th century. There was all this political upheaval. All these people were running around killing each other. Lots of power struggles going on. Plus, on top of that, they had earthquakes. They had huge tsunamis and things like that. I mean, like, the whole... Does this sound familiar? The whole physical world seemed to be in complete chaos. Plus, politically, everything was going nuts as well. Buddhist practice is for this world. Our Buddhist practice is about the Saha world. If we didn't have all of this stuff going on, as you know, in the world, what would we be doing? I mean, really. So this is kind of like the ground that we live in. This is the air we breathe, and this has been true since the day one. Buddhism doesn't have a creation myth, but in Christianity, right, the story is that God created heaven and earth and put Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And how long did that last? I don't know how long the time span is, but it didn't seem like it was very long before they were all of a sudden, all hell's breaking loose. And there they are, thrown out of paradise, and, Cain and Abel are killing each other, and off we go, right? So there's this way in which, this world has been... It's been a world of endurance. It is a world of endurance. This is our Buddha field. So in Buddhism, there are, you know, lots of different Buddha fields. But this is, you know, from a cosmic point of view, this is the Buddha field of Shakyamuni Buddha. So this is the perfect practice. So this is hard to grasp. This is the perfect practice in this Saha world, in this Bodhisattva world. So we can't reject this. Well, we can. But the idea is not to reject this. You know, this is, we've been very lucky in some ways, all of us, because we're kind of between that World War II, right? We had, well, I say this, I'm 67, so we had Vietnam, and Martin Luther King was killed, and John Kennedy was killed, and Robert Kennedy was killed, and all this stuff was going on. But I think that this world is, as Americans, we've been kind of lucky in the sense that nobody's dropping bombs on our houses, although I have to say these recent fires probably feel like that for the people who are involved in that. So this way that we've been in some ways protected, and we still are protected, and yet I think for whatever various reasons, suddenly we're completely inundated with all of these things that are going on, wildfires, storms, political upheaval, our own difficulties with that, the fact that we wish it were different, we want it to be different, but we can't just say, oh, I don't like this. I want it to be different. You know, I'm kind of like, oh, I'm going to stomp my feet on the ground and say, I want this to be different. You know, because this is what it is. This is the world as it is. And this, by the way, this Saha world is not just somebody else's karma, because it's all interconnected. It's not just somebody else's karma, it's ours. So this way in which we're all in this together. So we can't just say that somebody else did that. Somebody else is up to that. But actually whatever we can see or not see, we are still part of the totality of all of this world happening. So we're part of the totality of all the wonderful good things that happen, and we're part of the totality of all the things that are not so good that are happening. So this way in which it is our world, we're not separate from it. This is our Buddha field. This is the Saha Loko Buddha field. And for whatever reason, this is our life. So this is the ground of our life. So we have to use the ground to get up from the ground. We have to be with that ground and on some level be okay with that. On some level say, yes, this is what already is. So now what am I going to do? Now how am I going to respond to that? Now where am I going to make my effort? And again, if we say our effort has to be beating ourselves up because we're not going to Burma to save the Rohingya, then that in a way is the same thing as saying enlightenment has to be about some kind of perfection, because it's not grounded in your life, in your everyday life. So this way in which not to have grandiose ideas about saving the world, just have ideas about being more skillful in your own life. Because that's hard. That's much harder than having a fantasy about enlightenment. It's much harder than having a fantasy about how you're going to go out and go to some other country and save everybody. It's to actually be patient, actually be present, actually be kind, actually be compassionate as best we can in our own life right now. So that's the tough stuff. That's the practice of no inherently existing self. That's the practice of realizing that we're all in this together. And how are we going to negotiate this as bodhisattvas? So Dogen then says, they can get up by means of just one vigorous path. So this is a little biased towards Buddhism. But they can get up based on one vigorous path. Although I would say that one vigorous path, he's talking about following Buddhist path. But I would say that all religions essentially are altruistic. They get off, right? People get off on their religious beliefs, like they get very rigid and dogmatic and start doing unskillful things. But it seems to me that every religion that I encounter at heart is altruistic. So this vigorous path of spirituality, this vigorous path of morality and ethics is all based on things being in this interconnected relationship. We say, do unto others as you would like to have them do unto you, is about being in an interconnected relationship. Because if you didn't already have that connection with each other, you couldn't say, do unto others as you would like them to do unto you, because you and other would be so different, there would be no connection between being able to say what that doing unto each other would be. So we are not different, and yet we are all completely particular as individuals. So how do we negotiate that? So this is this vigorous path. He said, unless it is like this, getting up will in the end be impossible. So in some ways he's repeating himself, but here he's saying, you know, this vigorous path, that we make this effort to our mundane life, and at the same time to this interconnected, interpenetrating life of all beings. What we can see, and also what's hidden. A kind of faith in this altruism, this faith and taking refuge. We say, I take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. We take refuge in Buddha as this historical person who codified, if you will, this way of thinking about our life, but also in ourselves as Buddha, that each one of us is Buddha. Each one of us is part of this interconnected relationship, this Buddha nature. Dharma, which is the teaching, but Dharma also means, in Sanskrit, big D Dharma is the teachings, the law in Sanskrit. Little D Dharma is things. And again, this goes back to Inmo, this connection of these two states that simultaneously exist. The states of the particular thing, the it, it is. And also this state of the teachings or the totality, which we would say something like, everything preaches the Dharma. Everything is a teacher for us. So that and the Dharma. And then the Sangha is community. The Sangha is, however we're defining that community, we can define it as us sitting in the room here today. We can define it as everybody who lives in Santa Cruz. We can define it as everybody in the United States, the whole world, the whole universe, all those microbes and beings and another planet that we don't even know what it is. So this way that this is inclusive of everything. So we have to use both the ground of this concrete and definite it, and at the same time we have to use the state of a Buddha's life, which is our life, or suchness as things as they are. So we have to do both of these things, and we can't reject our life, we can't transcend our life, we have to really be here in our life just as it is, right now, in this moment, not some other place, but actually in this moment, because that's all we've got. There isn't any other place. There isn't any other nothing. This is it. This aha world. Here we are, guys. You know, what are we going to do? So this is the Bodhisattva path, is to be in this concrete cause of life, this everyday it, which includes good and bad. It includes pain and joy. And it is impermanence. Right? It is, impermanence means in causal relationship with other things. So that's the same definition of suchness. Suchness is also these causal relationships. It is the impermanence. It is the interconnectedness. It is this whole working of the universe simultaneously together. So, you know, how we negotiate both of these things, we have to oscillate in both states. And somehow in that oscillation, you know, if you oscillate white and black together and they keep going back and forth, eventually it becomes something gray, right? This way in which it becomes the same, a different color, but it's made up of those two colors. So this way, how do we find that? Back and forth, oscillating between the two. And maybe we oscillate so fast that it just becomes one thing, right? And that one thing just doesn't have a name. That one thing is just response. That one thing is just, what is it? So we have to say, what is it? What is needed here? What is it? And then we can say, what is it? So simultaneously there's that question and the answer happening simultaneously. And then what comes out of that is just this is it. Just this moment. Just this relationship. Just this time. Just this presencing. Just this. What do I do right now? What is my response right now? So that is how we use the ground to get up off the ground. Thank you.